All right, good morning, traders and Zinger Nation, and happy Monday. Welcome back to another episode of Pre-Market Prep. I'm AB. I got my man Dennis hanging out in the background. No Joel today, but we do have Jonathan Corpina joining us at 8:30. Excited for that. We got a lot of news to talk about. Google and Apple, AI deal, Google trading up more than 5% on that. We got to talk some NVIDIA conference, FOMC decision this week. We got a lot to talk about. Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, let me go ahead and share my Benzinga Pro. We'll go through some of the indices this morning. S&P 500 trading up, okay, about 0.25%. We might be getting some of those weird 8 a.m. prints right now. Q's says it's up over 1% right here. Let's go ahead and bring Dennis in. Last Friday, we did have some crazy trading action. Dennis, talk to me about last Friday. What happened at the open?
Yeah, so we had options expiration. So we do a quick 5-minute recap, then we'll get into the news items from Friday. But we had options expiration, which is always, it's usually a bigger event, but this was a really big event. So what we had was a lot of stocks that just had huge sell imbalances at the open. I tweeted about them before the open. We talked briefly about it, saying there's a lot of sell imbalances. And I said, things can change, but if, you know, these sell imbalances hold, this market's going to open a lot lower. The S&P was flat at that time when we started talking about that. Well, those sell imbalances grew, and they got bigger, and they got bigger, and the stocks just tanked right on the open. So if you look, the S&P only down like 0.6, 0.7%, but there was a lot of stocks, and I'll just go to my notes and just look from Friday, because there was a lot of stocks that were down significantly here. If I'm looking, and Coca-Cola opening way down, Microsoft opening way down, Berkshire Hathaway opening way down. So I tweeted it out. I bought about 16 or 17 stocks on the opening print. Look at Berk, for instance. This is a good example, because Berkshire Hathaway, usually a proxy for the overall market, lower beta, doesn't even move as much as the overall market. It closed on Thursday at 406. I think it was like 406 and a half. It opened at 402. And a half. It opened right at the low tick. So it opened down $4. And then you looked at like Microsoft, for instance, another one too. And again, you got to look at, you know, the intradays, and maybe on these charts, you're trying to catch up to me here on the charts. But Microsoft closed 422, opened way down at 417. So there was just, you know, huge discrepancies. And this is basic arbitrage is what it was, between where the S&P futures were and where stocks opened. It quickly closes. The ARBs close it basically right after the open. But if you had orders out there, and I use opening only orders, they're called OPG orders, where it opens and executes for my order, or it automatically cancels. What I do on options expiration is I often, you know, will send orders. If I think we're going to open too low, I'll send these OPG orders that, hey, if you want to open Berkshire Hathaway down $4 and the S&P is almost flat, I'll buy Berk and sell the S&P against it and hope that comes in a little bit. I didn't even need to sell the S&P against it, because most of those stocks, when they opened, they just were immediately right back up. So if you didn't have your opening print out there, you pretty much had no chance. But it's just showing you there's different strategies out there besides this trend following and, you know, and looking at momentum. Little intricate, you know, inefficiencies is stuff that I specialize in, stuff like this. So I just wanted to give you a little taste on that. Like, for instance, I was in Microsoft, and just looking at, I bought Microsoft at 418. It was actually 418.99. I'm just looking at my executions here. And I sold it 11 seconds later. Just going through, I sold it at 421.60. So you're talking about being in a stock for 11 seconds and making over $2.50 on it. So, I mean, there was good opportunity. Bank of America opened down like 60 cents, immediately back higher. It's a one you can really see on the chart. Can you see it there? I'm trying to look at your charts too. Go to Bank of America, AB.
Yeah. For some reason, the charts, weren't loading for a sec.
You can see right there. You see, yeah, like on that
it's
bar.
It's a five-minute chart. So, the low at the open was 35.25. On the next 5-minute candle, The high was 35.78.
So you bought that open at 35.25, and I can tell you in about 3 seconds later, it was already like 35.60. So you're talking about making 1% in like 3 seconds. This is not typical, folks. Like, it's not like you do this every day and you make money like this, but on options expiration, you usually get one or two of these days a year where stocks simply open too low or too high and relative to where the S&P is. And that's the edge. And, you know, anybody, you know, and why does that happen? Well, you have institutional flow that's just, I just need out of the stock today. You know, they want out for whatever reason. I don't know the reasons. I don't know those institutions. All I can say is they weren't respecting where the S&P futures were. They were just, get me out of these stocks. So, you know, going back, and I actually tweeted it out, all those stocks, I could bring that up there too, from Friday, because it was a really good day. If I just go just to my profile here, and I can tell you about all those stocks specifically. And the reason we're doing this is just showing you different ways to make money in the market. You know, a little bit of education, you know, early here on the day. But I bought, so these were the stocks I bought: Apple, Estee Lauder, CMA, Duke Energy, CVS, Bank America, Kroger, Coke, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, Berkshire Hathaway, Pfizer, Iron Mountain, Merck, Procter & Gamble, all on the opening print. I took zero heat on all of those stocks. I think it was 16 for 16, no losers, all winners. And I sold them all like within a minute, you know, after they opened. And some of them a few seconds after they opened. Why do you pick on stocks like Berkshire Hathaway or Kroger or Coca-Cola? They sound boring. Well, when Coke opens down 30, 40 cents on no news, there's a high likelihood it's going to pop right back there because it shouldn't have been down there in the first place. These are lower beta stocks. I just missed AT&T and it opened down. Verizon, but there was a lot of opportunity there just on the opening print, you know. And I tweeted out just a few minutes earlier how the S&Ps were trading almost flat, and there was a lot of stocks that were looking a lot lower. So it was a good opportunity. It gave us, you know, obviously, you know, there's different ways to make money in this market. So that's all I wanted to highlight. You know, we often just talk news and trend following, and that's all, you know, for the most part, that's all good too. But just be aware, there's lots of other little intricate opportunities there. The way I take advantage of that is using opening or only orders, OPG orders. They cancel or they execute. So worst case scenario for me there is I don't get executed, you know, and I just don't get any fills. And a lot of times that happens. But on this day, it was a really good open for me. That was my best day of the year.
Yeah, and we talked about it last week on Friday's show, just about the chop and the volatility. And I mean, it's continuing today. We had, you know, the market kind of a wide overall sell-off, you know, just looking at last week as a whole on this hotter than expected inflation data. And then today, it looks like the market's just trying to bounce right back. Q's trading up more than 1%. We'll go into, again, some of the top news stories that are driving those stocks right now. Of course, you do have Google, which has been one of the AI laggards. I mean, people have talked about Google as an AI play, but it's been kind of behind the, you know, in the back of the pack compared to some of the other companies in terms of Google's AI product. People weren't that bullish on Bard and all this stuff. But now Google's Gemini, they're talking about integrating Google Gemini into the iPhone, a deal with Apple. Google's just taking off on this, up $7.50 this morning. Dennis, would you be buying this at the open, or would you be worried that you're going to see some people coming in and taking profit?
No. And again, I'd probably just lay off it. I'm not going to chase. Google has been behind, and Google has been out of favor here for a while. So does this headline put it back into favor? Possibility is there. So I can't just come in and automatically short this and say, well, this is stupid, I'm just going to short it. I mean, you're coming into resistance, though. I'm not chasing it, because chasing is not my blood. When's the last time Google was up 5% on a non-earnings play? You know, it's been a long time. It's a big headline for them, though. Maybe gets them back, you know, in the AI category where we're putting them with the NVIDIAs and the Microsofts and the other companies that have really been moving. But I think you've just got to be very careful chasing stocks. Google up $7 is a huge move. It's traded 1 million shares. It's going to be up. I just think I don't want to chase things, not in this market. And again, we got to think of the overall tape too. The tape was very ugly on Fridays. Like, we talked about, you know, these intricate little inefficiencies on Friday, but the tape itself wasn't pretty on Friday either. You know, SPY getting hit, a lot of big stocks getting hit, Microsoft giving back all of its gains from the day before, and then it's continuing to go down here as well. So I think you've got to just consider that this market, the tape itself, the broad tape, hasn't been that great in the last few days. So that doesn't mean I'm chasing stocks. It means I'd be more inclined to sell the rip. So I'm like, but again, I don't like fading AI headlines because I've seen these things just go crazy. So if it opened at like 150, then went up to 151, then came back down through 150, would I take a shot on the short side? Maybe. You've got to have your point, though. I'm not just going to try to call the top like just like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of feels like this market, it's just been, you know, like if you have faded every big move, whether that be going short when some of these stocks rip or going long when they dip, over the past couple of weeks has really worked out because the volatility, and we talked about this with CC on Friday as well, he was on Friday, that the volatility has just been very good. Looking at the chart or looking at the S&P 500, you wouldn't really know because, you know, okay, S&P 500 went up 2% over the last month or whatever, but then the intraday moves have been really crazy where last week and the week before, we saw consistently where the market would be trading down all day and then right at 3:30, boom, you had a rally or vice versa. The market had been trading up all day and then at 3:30 you had a sell-off. So for like quick traders like yourself, Dennis, this market has been very strong. I mean, do you see this trend continuing?
I think you're into a choppy period. So we're at a really battle. I mean, today's a big day too, and we haven't even talked about NVIDIA here yet.
Nope,
and
that's not.
They've got the NVIDIA event. It can move the entire market. Like NVIDIA has really been moving the entire market. You know, there's certain stocks that are going opposite, but overall, it's been NVIDIA's market. NVIDIA is trading up 24 points here this morning. I was long extra NVIDIA coming in today. I sold it already in the pre-market. I'm extra long because it was an instant 24 points. I sold right around here, 902, right in this area. The reason I was long extra because the event. I mean, now they're giving me 2.7% ahead of the event. I'm still long all my core NVIDIA. I didn't sell any of my core holding. But, you know, you're trading. You know, I've got a trading account as well. So you buy a little extra ahead of the event, hoping for a pop ahead of the event. Well, you got it. You got your pop ahead of the event. Is it going to pop further? People are saying $1,000 today. All I know is there's an inefficiency. Again, talking inefficiencies of stocks trading up ahead of events. NVIDIA just gave you 2.8% if you would have bought on the Friday close and be selling it right now here in the pre-market. So that's a nice little bonus. The core, my core NVIDIA position, I'm just holding, is, you know, this, you know, are we going to blast off to 1,000? It depends what they say. If they say some really cool stuff, maybe they, you know, even talk about, you know, the company doing even better or something. Or do they, you know, if they say some really cool things, it's possible it could continue to pop. But more often than not, these are events that run up into the event and then they peter out after and sometimes sell off at the event. So I don't think I'm chasing at this point now. The buy was close on Friday, flipping it overnight, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so today that NVIDIA conference will kick off. You have Jensen Huang, the CEO, who, again, a few weeks ago after NVIDIA reported earnings, Jim Cramer deemed the GOAT of all CEOs over Elon Musk. I mean, so Jensen Huang is expected to talk today. He's given like a 2-hour keynote conference. So people will be tuning in. Basically, all eyes will be on what he's saying. 2 years ago in 2022, this conference is when NVIDIA debuted its Hopper and H100 cards, which have been a lot of the, you know, the technology used for this AI boom recently. They're expected to announce updated models, all this stuff. The other kind of wild card here will be what NVIDIA says it's going to do with its chips to China. Because essentially the U.S. government has come in and said like, okay, NVIDIA, you can sell chips to China, but they have to be these dumbed down versions of them. So NVIDIA is expected to make an announcement there and probably talk about, okay, yeah, we're selling these, nerfed down or slightly less powerful chips. At the end of the day, China's a huge market. So if NVIDIA is able to say, okay, yeah, we're releasing this card and expecting to increase our sales to China by X amount, that could be a driver too. And we've talked about China recently in the past couple of weeks on the show. But I mean, every time when you have events like this, Dennis, I just get, you know, a little bit tentative on, is it time to kind of sell the profits into the event? Because if even slightly something is construed as a disappointment or maybe not as exciting as people were expecting, or maybe Jensen Huang tries to tamper expectations a little. I mean, you know, do you think you could see this being a sell the news type event?
I've made a lot of money in my 25-year career buying stocks ahead of events and then selling them right before the event, because the event is a coin flip. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down, but a lot of times you see them go down after the events. It's a, like, we're excited for this. And then the stock has the event. They say some cool things, and they're like, well, what do I have to look forward to? Stocks always want something to look forward to. When they don't have it, then, you know, you can have a sell-off. I mean, we're going to get into a lull in this market here, too. What do we have to look forward to overall after the video? Oh, we got some Fed speak. But, you know, the earnings, this is a very light earnings week. We're coming into the end of earnings season. We get back into it in 3 weeks, but we have a 2-3 week lull here. Maybe the stocks, you know, they seem like they wanted to cool off Friday. Now we're getting the NVIDIA pop this morning. I'm going to call it the NVIDIA and the Google pop. Two stocks driving us up here. AI theme coming back in. You can clearly see which stocks are leading the charge here, and it is AI. Chips are all up, moving up with it, Google and NVIDIA here. So I think you're right. I think you got to be careful. Now, does that mean I'm going and selling my core NVIDIA long-term position? No, because I bought that at $400 and $500. And I feel like the AI story is still in the early innings. I think when we look at NVIDIA a year from now, I think it's going to be higher. Is it going to be higher a day from now? Impossible to predict. But, you know, that's why I've sold my trading position that I bought on Friday. So had NVIDIA the last 3-4 months or whatever it was, 3 months, I guess, in the long-term position, even longer than that. The 400 I bought about 6 months ago. And I bought more NVIDIA on Friday after hours, because I wanted to be long into the over weekend, into the event. I sold that extra position because I'm not saying, oh yeah, we're going to 1,000, I'm going to hold this extra, because it's a coin flip. I don't know on my trade. So the trade I'm out of, the core investment I'm still holding, and it may go down, you know, and people, if it goes down $100 or it goes down $20, Twitter will reach out to me and say how much I'm an idiot for not selling my NVIDIA. But I'm telling you, you've got to somewhat separate long-term stuff. You can't be having something in a long-term portfolio, and every time there's an earnings or every time there's an event, well, I'm going to get out and I'm going to get in. That's trading. That's okay for trading. But if you're a long-term investor, you've got to hold through some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, it kind of reminds me, I mean, the hype around this event and the buzz going into it. I mean, back in the day when Apple would have events when, I mean, let's face it, Apple has kind of lost its position as the most cutting edge technology company in the world. You know, you go back 10 years ago when Apple had an event, all eyes were on Apple. And still, when Apple has an event and announces new products, you have a lot of attention there and people, you know, looking at it. But now, you know, it seems like there's a little bit more excitement about NVIDIA and this AI trade. Something I'm curious, though, about is, I mean, I feel like some of the technology that NVIDIA is going to be talking about and updates on the, you know, B100 chip and the Hopper chips, like I was talking about, like, how much is it, of that is stuff, Dennis, that like traders and investors are don't really know enough about, or it kind of like goes over their head? I mean, you know, they can kind of, I guess, listen to Jensen Huang talk and try to decipher what exactly it means for the company. But I feel like with Apple, when they announce a new phone or something, it's a little bit easier to determine, okay, yeah, is this a really bullish announcement versus NVIDIA making some announcement about its chips and AI? And it's a little bit more technologically, you know, I don't think a lot of people have expertise in that.
I don't either. And I've been making money and trading NVIDIA and obviously investing in NVIDIA all year. You don't need to. As a trader or an investor, you just need to understand the overall story. I think you can invest just like with the overall theme. Like, I think even like Warren Buffett says, don't invest in companies you don't understand. Does that mean Warren Buffett has to understand every intricate little detail of every company he owns? Or does he need to understand what they're doing and the overall picture? I think just understanding the overall picture, the movement to AI. I think if you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out, well, they're going to talk about this AI chip, and that's going to mean this for the stock, or that's going to mean this for the stock, I think you're doing a lot of work for nothing. Because I think it's very difficult to you know, figure out what a stock's going to do because of a specific announcement. So what they say today, we know they're going to talk AI. We know they're going to talk chips. We're going to talk lots of different things with NVIDIA. It's going to be a lot of cool things. What that market interpretation is going to be is impossible to predict. So if you're sitting here trying to, you know, figure out, you know, all that, and that's going to give you your prediction, it's going to be difficult. All I'm looking at is the stocks. I'm pretty strong. It's running up into the event here today as well. I'm taking my trading profits into the event, holding the long-term core position, because I still believe NVIDIA is in the pole position, and I believe AI is real.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I think that's the key there is, like, if you understand the trends and the companies, how they play into those trends, will they continue to benefit from these trends, then you're okay. You know, you don't have to understand what every single little chip from AI means or chip from NVIDIA means for AI, et cetera. You did have some price target raises this morning. Truist Securities maintains buy on NVIDIA, raises price target to $1,177. You had another one from HSBC maintains buy on NVIDIA, raises price target to 1,050. Moving on from NVIDIA, and we'll of course, you know, come back if we get any more news about the conference. Bitcoin trading a little bit higher this morning. Let's look at the chart here. You had a big sell-off over the past 5 days. Bitcoin is down more than 6%. And I talked about this last week on the show, Dennis, is that when some of these like meme coins really start running and you see some coin you've never heard of up 1,000% in a couple of days, and you see tweets about people that put $200 into a coin and turn it into $10,000, like that starts to kind of feel like, you know, the end of the speculation cycle for me, that it's like, okay, now things are getting in a little bit crazy. I'm not saying Bitcoin, you know, done here, but I think quickly you need to see Bitcoin get back above 70,000 if this run is going to continue. Otherwise, you might just have some, you know, steam kind of taken out here. And I don't know. I wouldn't be buying Bitcoin right here at 68 until, again, it can prove that it reclaims that 70,000.
It probably needs a cool off period, 40,000 to 70,000 in a month. That's basically what we did. It's been great. I haven't sold any of my Bitcoin either, so just hodling here. I think we're gonna see 100,000 eventually. I don't know the path to get there. Is it gonna like break me, goes down to 65? I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't take the heat, I gotta get out. I don't think so. One, because it's a smaller position, you know, it is up to like almost 5% of my long-term portfolio, which isn't a small position anymore, but at the same time, you know, I've bought a lot of this, you know, a lot lower, so I feel like I can hold through this. If you think you're a trader, you know, maybe you're taking some profits into this, but it seems like the dip is just getting bought. And I just don't think Bitcoin is going away. So other crypto stuff, I don't know anything about. I think there's a bubble in a lot of the other crypto things. It all gets hot, you know, when Bitcoin starts to go. But I still think Bitcoin's going higher. I think we're going to see 100,000 eventually.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not really talking, I guess, about like the long term. I just think right now, like you said, the big move from 40,000 to 70,000, anytime you have, you know, that type of move, there's usually some sort of cool off period on the other side. And again, if I were a big holder of Bitcoin, I wouldn't be, you know, selling right now either. I would just be watching to make sure we can at least kind of hold above this 65,000 level again. Hopefully get back above that 70,000 level, I think would be a good sign for Bitcoin. You do have some of the Bitcoin related stocks, Coinbase trading slightly lower this morning. Coinbase has really gotten hit hard the past 5 days as well, down more than 10% on Coinbase. But again, I mean, Coinbase is just going to trade with Bitcoin. So if you see Bitcoin start running, Coinbase should get another pop there. But I mean, that move in Coinbase over the last, I mean, we were at $50. You know, not too long ago, like
100. Well, yeah, if you go back to 50,
yeah,
but yeah, $50 was a year ago, which is a big move itself. But just looking since February, I mean, we're $114. We've doubled in a month. I've never made a lot of money buying stocks that have doubled in a month. You know, it can continue. The momentum can continue, and sometimes momentum traders say those are the ones you want. I just, you know, feel like I'd be late to the party. So what I want now is a consolidation period. You know, a little bit of a hook where it starts to look like it's going to go again, and then I would jump in. So as of right now, we've topped out, you know, in the short term, I think. So it's a matter of, you know, and you could say, well, Friday, you know, we maybe, you know, bottomed out on a lot of things right off the open because it was pretty ugly off the open too, opening down 225, and then it ripped and closed pretty strong. But I think I want a consolidation period. If it goes without me, it goes without me. But again, to your point, I'm in Bitcoin. So I'm going to make, if Coinbase starts going, it's going to be because Bitcoin's went higher. So I'm in essence, I'm kind of long coin in that way.
Got it. All right. Well, we do have some, you know, other upgrades and analyst ratings this morning. We can go through some of those. And then in the chat, let me know if you guys have any stocks you're watching pre-market again this morning. Don't really have a lot of economic data due today or really any big earnings, but we do have some bigger earnings later this week. We also, of course, have the FOMC decision on Wednesday. what the Federal Reserve will do with interest rates. The expectation is for the Federal Reserve to maintain interest rates where they are. The CME watch tool, I can pull that up, is giving it a 99% chance that interest rates will stay where they are. And then, of course, that'll be at 2 p.m. Powell will give his conference at 2:30. The market will be volatile and moving off that. Just to look at some earnings we have coming this week. Tomorrow.
Stay with the Fed talk for a minute because it's going to be about the language before you leave. Can you bring up that tool? Show us that tool. Can we look out to, you know, the odds in June, the odds in September now? Let's just see where we are. I know the September odds are quite high for a rate, for lowering rates, but
yeah, so
where are we for June now?
This is for March, and like I mentioned, it's the CME watch tool.
Yeah, they
take into account like bond, you know, how bonds are traded and all this. 99% chance.
Not moving in March.
Right. Let's go to May real quick. May, you have an 89% chance, so a 10% chance that they cut rates by
a quarter of a percent.
Very little of a percent. Little chance there. June, you got about a 50% chance that we cut by a quarter, a 5% chance that it's going to be by that point, you know, 50 basis points lower, but then a 44% chance that we're still going to be in the same spot we're at, go out to July. And that's where you start getting that the CME watch tool is only giving a 25% chance that by the end of July, so right now we're talking about, you know, then 3-4 months away, that there's only going to be a 24% chance that rates are where they're at. And then more than a 60% chance they will either be a quarter of a percent or half a percent lower than they are right now. So the market is still pricing in these rate cuts despite, you know, the higher inflation numbers that we got. We're just looking at them now further down the road instead of, you know, starting in Q1, Q2, like a lot of people anticipated heading into the year.
Well, they've kicked the can down the road. They've kicked the rate. And that's what you're seeing. And that's why you're seeing like the IWM come off in the last few days. So I think we're still at that point since we got that inflation data that you got to be careful just chasing this market here, because this market was very excited to the possibilities of actually cutting, like high probability we're going to cut in May or June. And now we're looking out to, you know, maybe 50-50 coin flip. It's not like 80% anymore. Like, do you have where it was before that? You know, you maybe don't have that data where it was.
Or for which one? For
Look for June. Where was it before June, that inflation data? Like, where were we a week ago?
So a week ago, we were looking at it's pretty much unchanged. So
was it 2 weeks ago? When did we get that inflation data point? I'm losing track of time here.
We got that last week. So for we're looking at June right now to cut for a quarter of a percent. It's now a 50% chance. A day or a week ago, it was 60% chance.
60%, so it went down.
Yeah, and a month ago, it was 55. So it went up a little bit and then went down. You're seeing like basically what the CME watch tool is saying is that, you know, the rate cuts are still on the board, but they're a little bit less likely than we thought they were a month ago. If you went back to what it was showing 2 months ago, it was showing like an 80% chance for those cuts.
So yeah,
it is still trending lower. But again, looking at that data, it's looking like, you know, they're still expecting some form of rate cuts later this year.
And I think we're going to get rate cuts here later this year, too. The issue is, are we too early to just come here and start buying solar stocks right now? We know they got smacked last week. Because before that inflation data point, there was a little bit higher probability that the rate cuts were coming a little bit sooner. Now they're pushing that down. That's why solar's got hit. There will be a time, folks, to buy solar stocks. There will be a time, folks, to buy all your small caps, all your banks, your regional banks, and everything that's interest rate sensitive. I'm not sure we're at that time yet. I feel like we got to wait a little bit longer here. I want to see more inflation data points here to give me more information. Like, inflation continues to tick higher. They'll kick those rate cuts to the end of the year. And that's going to be really bad for a lot of those stocks. Does the AI trade work no matter what? I think it probably still does. And that's why those people continue to gravitate to those stocks.
Got it. All right. Well, we do, like I mentioned, we do have some analyst ratings we can go through real quick. Before we bring on Jonathan Corpina here in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This one, so I saw Snowflake got an upgrade from sell to neutral. Let's go ahead and look at if Snowflake is it's trading slightly higher here.
Yeah.
Snowflake,
you want to see, so here's just for ratings, what you want to see to neutral doesn't nearly move as much as when you get them to buy. when you get a stock that's moving from like sell to buy, it's huge, or buy to sell, it's huge, or even going from neutral to buy or neutral to sell. Those are big movers. When you go from buy to neutral or you go from sell to neutral, it's basically like they're taking their profits. So, you know, they were obviously sitting here at, they're going to neutral. So they were obviously sitting at sell. So they were correct. So the analyst is simply saying, I'm ringing the register on my sell call here. So it's like a closing position almost for the analyst. So that's why they don't move nearly as much. Now, with that being said, does that, you know, give it a vote of confidence? That's okay. While some of these analysts are saying it's getting cheap enough now that I don't want to be shorted anymore. I don't want to I don't want to have sold the stock. So maybe, you know, this is the turnaround point. Snowflake has been a disaster since the earnings report. It needs a vote of confidence. If this was going to overweight, if this rating, and who was it that did the rating?
It was, I didn't know how to pronounce it. It was like Mon. Let's pull it up right here.
Okay, so it's a smaller company.
Mon Crespi Hart upgrade Snowflake to neutral. So it's not.
So you got a smaller company doing it too. So it's not going to have a lot of weight either. If it's Morgan or Goldman or J.P. Morgan or some of the other ones, even Stiefel, there's lots of Piper, obviously Wedbush, then it's a little bit more oomph behind it. So it's one, it's not a major firm doing the upgrade. Two, it's not to overweight. So I don't think it's going to be a major mover, but Snowflake is in the gutter and people see upgrade and maybe that's going to make a few people come in and that's what you're seeing this morning. But I think it needs more of a vote of confidence to turn the story around because Snowflake has been a disaster since the earnings. We know the valuation's extreme. The earnings weren't great. It needs a vote of confidence to turn it around. I'm not sure this is good enough to give it that vote of confidence to turn the stock around.
I mean, Snowflake is like a cloud-based like data company, right? You would think, with, AI, what does AI need? It needs a lot of data. You would think Snowflake would, some people at least would be looking at it as an AI play, which to me, that's been like a big problem is that if you're somewhat related to AI and your stock's still getting killed right now, then maybe you've got some bigger problems and things aren't really like working out too well for you. But again, I mean, I think some of these data plays long-term with AI could be, could benefit really largely from this. But right now, again, Snowflake just hasn't been part of that story. We did get also
We've just had a turn in sentiment in the last week too, which isn't helping. The Q's topped out, 6 days ago. We've been leaking since we get the snapback rally today, which I believe is to be sold. I'll say it right now. I think, this is just a snapback NVIDIA, Google-type rally, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of it peters out. So you look at Palo Alto Networks, for instance. They had the earnings. Then they got the Pelosi pop. It was obviously heard that she had bought calls, and everybody, oh, my gosh, Pelosi, bye, bye, bye. Well, everybody who chased her, it was over $300 when we were getting that information. Everybody who chased that is now down money, too. So Snowflake, Palo Alto Networks reported. Adobe reported and it was not good either. So you've seen two or three significant companies reporting that weren't just these blow away earnings. The earnings weren't terrible. They just weren't blowing it away. And then you look at valuation and you're like, well, the growth slowing maybe a little bit there. Maybe the story's not as hot as I thought it was going to be. And investors are cool to those stocks. It takes like another data point, like another earnings, or it takes, a vote of confidence from an analyst to really turn those stories around. So it isn't necessary that these companies are lagging. It's probably a combination of the market is kind of a little bit in profit-taking mode here right now. And two is that if the earnings, weren't that great for the last quarter, the investors are just being cautious looking ahead. Maybe the next quarter is going to be great for some of these companies. Maybe these are going to be proven to be buying opportunities. Maybe Nancy Pelosi is going to be right on her Palo Alto Network calls. But right now, she's looking like she actually could be wrong.
Yeah. And again, last week, definitely the market, felt like people were being a little bit more cautious after the big rally we had. All right, we got time to go through one more analyst upgrade before we bring on Corpina. You got Pepsi trading up 1.5% this morning. This is on news from a Morgan Stanley upgrade to overweight, announcing an $190 price target, currently trading at $167. So this one comes from a bank with a little bit more weight, Morgan Stanley, than the one on Snowflake. So you're seeing Pepsi, again, moving 1.5%. Doesn't sound like that much, but for a stock like Pepsi, you typically don't see it making moves like that in the pre-market, just getting a pop off this upgrade. How are we feeling about these, you know, consumer staples right now? You don't think Ozempic is coming in and killing Pepsi and Frito-Lay's profits too much?
Well, full disclosure, I have a position in Pepsi. I'm actually short the stock. I was shorted overnight. So I'm getting dinged on this. I will cover this today and take the loss. It's just bad luck. Sometimes you're short a stock and it gets upgraded overnight and you eat it. I'm surprised up this much. That, like, to your point, that's a big move for Pepsi, 1.5% overnight. Consumer staples aren't having a great day here overall. They're barely up. Usually when you have this, you know, risk on day where you've got, you know, people are going in AI, they're not going into consumer staples. So I'm actually surprised Pepsi's up this much, but it's a vote of confidence for the stock. So it's up. Again, I'm going to take a loss on this and move on, probably at the open.
Yeah, I mean, Pepsi was one of those companies that people talked a lot about as Ozempic got bigger, that it could come in, eat into some of those profits. And I don't think you're actually seeing too much of that. I mean, probably some of it. But again, Pepsi is just one of those stocks. You've got price to sales of 2.5. So forward PE at 20. So it's a reasonable valuation. But I mean, like, I always am looking for the big growth stories, Dennis. And to me, Pepsi, Frito-Lay, like, there's just...
Show me the AI in there.
Yeah, exactly. Show me the AI. It's not... I'm not... I don't see the potential growth that I would like to see in companies I'm investing in. But all right, it is 8:36 a.m. Eastern time. We've got Jonathan Corpina hanging out with us backstage. Let's go ahead and give Jonathan our special welcome. And when we come back, see what Jonathan's been watching. All right, Jonathan Corpina, welcome back to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. How are you doing this morning?
Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So what has been top of mind? What have you been watching, Jonathan?
You know, I've been listening to your show this morning, and you guys are really just hitting on everything that we've been talking about down on the New York Stock Exchange, right? Seems like this market tries to continue to push higher and higher, and then every once in a while we get these big sell pressures that come into the market. It just seems at this point, you know, if you were trying to pick one of the sides that's here, I think this market does have some downside room to it. There's so many factors that are sitting out there on top of this market, and every time we try to peek our head up, it just seems like the next wave of headlines comes in, the next wave of sentiment comes in and pushes us lower. So, I mean, I continue to watch this market as we continue to trend in these ranges here, but there's not that optimism that we've seen before towards the end of the year and then in January and February that we're feeling right now. I think there's just so many headwinds that are here anytime we see a pop in the market, and we're going to see it today. Look at the activity we had on Thursday and Friday, right? Two down days back to back. First time we've seen it this year of that type of significance. Now we're going to get a pop to this market today. I think people are going to use this as an opportunity to take some very short-term profits off the table, because overall, the trend has been for the prior 3 months to move higher. But now that euphoria is not still there at this point. So I think we're going to continue to see this two steps forward, one step back type of momentum into our markets. But again, the enthusiasm behind it, we're not feeling it at this point.
Jonathan, let's talk about Friday. Just before you move on here, Aaron, I just want to talk about, he mentioned, you know, Thursday and Friday's action. What was the floor action Friday morning? Because that was a pretty crazy open. We had an options expiration. Obviously I'm not on the floor, but I could see it from this perspective. Some huge sell imbalances off the bat. And stocks opened significantly lower. Like, the S&P got hammered 10 minutes before the open because you could see the stocks were going to want to open lower. And the S&P was playing catch up there. What's that like, you know, on those days for you guys down on the floor? Because that was some pretty good action on Friday morning.
So clearly Friday was a special situation day, being a large rebalance in the S&P. We obviously know this day's coming in. I think what happens on those days is that portfolio managers look for those days as opportunities to move large pieces of stock because the volume is there to help and support it, right? And it can go both ways on the buy side and the sell side. But with the activity that we've seen in the market, it seemed like Friday morning, once we started posting our imbalances and seeing where that momentum was going and that follow through from Thursday, a lot of portfolio managers use this as an opportunity to really unload some of their positions, cut down some of their positions, I should say, in this opportunity because the volume was there. And then it just snowballed from there. We had significant volume on the opening. And if you you look at some volume charts, we saw a peak in volume on Wednesday and Thursday coming into this rebalance. So we saw big imbalances on Friday morning where people took that opportunity to use. Sometimes after the mornings, we get pops that come after that once it kind of flushes itself out. And then in anticipation of that Friday close, where we're going to see, again, a significant volume influx into the market. And it seemed like Friday, we got a push on the opening on the downside. The market kind of tried to work itself through. We did see some volatility throughout the day, but then overall we saw that push come back in on the sell side. Tons of volume on the opening and the close. I don't have the statistical data yet from the close on Friday, but there was significant volume that we saw, a lot of activity. And again, people use these as opportunities to move a bigger position that they have, to cut some of their position down or add to their position without having a significant impact on the stock, because the volume is there to certainly support it. But on a day like we saw on Friday, and with the trends that we've seen in the market so far, it seemed like there was significantly a lot more selling into this close than we've seen before in the past.
Jonathan, I'm getting a couple comments in the chat just that your volume's a little low. If you don't mind checking just to make sure, because I see you got your nice headset on, that it's actually... Yeah. Using the headset. If you go to the settings and audio settings, I think Dennis and I can hear you fine because we've got our headsets on. So if you can't figure it out, then it's no big deal. We'll just
there continue. We go.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan.
I think I added that up.
All right, cool. You know, it's been hard this year, I think, to find a lot of storylines in the market that's not just AI. I mean, that's obviously been the very dominant story. You also have the weight loss drugs have been big. But one that we're still following that's been kind of a storyline for a year is what's going on in the regional banks. Of course, NYCB getting hit the past couple weeks. You had the company announce some restructuring, new CEO, all this stuff. What are you seeing in the regional banking world?
Yeah, clearly that's been one that we've been watching. You know, you go back to what happened with Silicon Valley and then Signature Bank and the fallout from that. That headline got quiet for quite some time. And then recently it kind of popped its head back up again. We continue to watch what's happening in the commercial real estate world here, especially in New York. We see the buildings here with the vacancies that are tied into it and a very slow conversion in some of these buildings from commercial to residential properties. But that continues to be a large exposure in some of these regional banks. This has been an area for the regional banks that have been very profitable for them for quite some time. But the fallout from COVID, we're still dealing with that 4 years later now, is that these, you know, commercial real estate loans are sitting on the books on some of these regional banks. And as they come due, it's not gonna bear well for this sector. So what we saw there recently in NYCB, that has had significant exposure throughout multiple mergers that they've seen throughout this period of time for commercial real estate exposure. And we didn't get that contagion effect like we did back with Silicon Valley and Signature when that all unfolded rather quickly and there was that contagion effect. We're not seeing that yet with what's happened with NYCB, but in the back of our minds, in the back of everyone's mind, there is still that exposure that's out there, and there is still that worry of what other regional bank has this on their books, and how is it this going to impact not only their stock price but the entire sector. One good thing that we saw with NYCB is how quickly that came to head, right, with the exposure and how the stock price got hit rather quickly. And then B, when we saw the investors come in, insert capital into them, restructure, new C-suite level personnel, we see a reverse stock split. So that all kind of fixed itself, I'm going to say fixed, rather quickly. So that was the good side to that. And I think if we are going to see that again, and I do think we're going to see that again in some of the other regional banks, it's going to be quick. It's going to be a quick sell-off and then a quick restructure. So we've kind of had the playbook in place now for Silicon Valley Bank. We saw it with Signature. We see it with NYCB. It will happen again, in my opinion. It's just a question of who and where and when. But when it does happen, we are going to see some of these private equity firms, like we saw with NYCB, come in rather quickly and scoop it up for pennies on the dollar.
Got it. And I mean, yeah, like, are there any names, I guess, specifically in this space that you think are like trading, you know, that could be good buying opportunities, whether that be, you know, a Comerica or Western Alliance? Are you looking
I think Valley's been one that that's been in the headlines. They've got great management that's in place there. I think what's happening is that you've seen, as some of these other regional banks have been sitting on the sidelines internally looking at what they have on their books and how they're going to rework it. They've had the luxury of being on the sidelines and watching somewhat from the outside in to see what's going on. So I think there are you know, executive teams that are out there that have been able to really get ahead of this. And I think with the contagion effect that might occur, I'll go back to what I said before, they're probably already putting things in place rather quickly in case this does happen. So some of these other regionals have kind of got their game plan in place, as opposed to what we've seen in some of the other ones when all of a sudden the headlines hit and we see 40% decrease in the stock, then they start to scramble. I think some of these banks are beyond scramble mode at this point, and they're already plugging the holes where they need to be.
Jonathan, don't you think, though, if we start getting rates, you know, and again, you know, if probably the inflation data last week didn't do a world of good for the KRE, but if we start getting, you know, in the back half of this year, rates actually start going down, that regional banks will have their opportunity and they'll have their day in the sun. I think I see this more as a rate play, and I see, like, maybe I lay off these regional banks for the next month or two. If they're not going to cut in May or June, they're looking out to September. Why go in the regional banks, you know, 6 months before the cuts? Why not wait until we get into the summertime when we get closer to the cuts?
Yeah, it's going to be a longer play into this, right? You're going to have to be able to, A, if you're a holder of these stocks, be able to weather the storm over the next 6 to 9 months. And B, if you're looking to get into it, it's a question of when is the right time to get there. As you guys were talking about in your lead-in show, and as I'm sure we'll talk about the Fed is going to make a move. It's just a question of when they're going to do it. I think, obviously, indications of what you guys spoke about, you know, 50% chance of we see something in June, and clearly that goes higher as the year goes on there. So if this is somewhat of a waiting game, those regional banks are certainly going to benefit when the Fed decides to cut rates. It's just a question of when and how long does that take. When the Fed does cut rates, how long does that impact actually have come onto the books of some of these regional banks? So this isn't a try to get ahead of it because you're going to see a nice pop here. I think this is one where you're going to have to wait it out to see exactly how the Fed comes back into play of cutting rates, and then how long will that take to actually see that impact in the stock price.
Jonathan, another big storyline this week that people are looking forward to. Thursday, Reddit is expected to hit the public markets with its long-anticipated IPO. I mean, the company's been talking about this for a few years. I think they might have just waited for a little bit of a better market condition. You didn't really see too many big IPOs the past couple of years. I was seeing headlines over the weekend that Reddit's IPO as much as 5 times oversubscribed. What does that exactly mean?
Right. So let's kind of back up a little bit. Pre-COVID, right, we had this IPO streak of stocks coming to market, right? And they're all timed. They want to time themselves appropriately when they can get the best valuation and the best amount of investors into their stocks. And then COVID came, and all of these stocks that were kind of in the pipeline, they all went on the shelves. And we really haven't seen a flip of the switch of that in quite some time to come back into play. As the market rebound off of COVID and people are still very cautious about long-term effects on our economy and how that was going to play out, we've still had these stocks on the shelf. And now if you look at the activity that we saw at the end of last year, it seems like it's starting to come back rather slowly. Reddit is one of these stocks that has been on the shelf for quite some time, and they finally decided to come back to market. I think from, you know, for a few perspective, it's a very great indication just overall for the IPO syndicate market that they feel comfortable coming. It's a big name. It's a big deal. I'm sure if this goes well and if this fares well as far as the IPO process and trading afterwards, that we're going to start to see more follow suit behind that. I think a lot of companies out there have been waiting for a leader to come into play and waiting to see who's going to make that big first move. This is what we're going to see coming from Reddit. And clearly, when there's not a lot of IPOs that have been out there, or certainly ones that have attracted a lot of attention, when one does come to play, it's the prettiest girl at the dance. Everybody wants to ask her to dance, right? So we're seeing a lot of activity, a lot of interest in this, priced in the 31, 34 range at this point right now. We're seeing that it's 5 times oversubscribed. That just means that there's so much interest that's out there. You've got banks and institutions that are saying, I want to buy 1 million shares. I want to buy 5 million shares. I want to buy 500,000 shares. And when they take all these numbers together, there's just not enough liquidity that the company is selling on this IPO process to satisfy all the buyers who want to get into this. That's when it becomes oversubscribed. So what will happen is that on Thursday, it'll get priced in the indication range on Wednesday night. On Thursday, the IPO will come to market on the New York Stock Exchange, which is a big win for NYSE to get this this type of company to come down. So we'll see the whole hoopla and fanfare that's associated with that. But we'll see that pricing process, and it'll take quite some time. I don't expect this stock to open early on Thursday morning. It'll be a 11:30 to 1 o'clock opening of Reddit. But we'll see that influx of activity. And again, you've got these syndicate desks that are out there. You've got these hedge funds that have syndicate pads and books that are associated with it. And there has not been that activity really driving their performance there. So what are they going to do? Everyone's going to jump over themselves to get involved in this. Everyone's going to want a piece of this. Again, prettiest girl at the dance. Everyone's going to want to dance with her. So I think we're going to see a significant pop in this one based off of overall the excitement of Reddit, based off of the business model of Reddit, and based off of the fact that our markets have performed fairly well over the last, you know, 6 months or so, and people feel like this is the time to get in. And then once you start throwing that retail flow in there, right, the retail investors are not going to be able to really participate on the IPO process that's there. When the stock opens on the New York Stock Exchange, that's when they'll be able to participate, and you will get that snowball effect that's associated there. So we'll see a lot of activity for this one. It's an exciting week ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Reddit's one of those ones. I mean, you know, you get a lot of times the pop on the day of the IPO. I think back to Robinhood. I think back to Coinbase. And it sounds like there's a lot of outweighed demand compared to supply when you were talking about how oversubscribed it is. I'm not that smart of a guy, but I know that usually when something has more demand than supply, price goes up. But a lot of times with these IPOs, we've talked about data on this show that indicates that, you know, the vast majority of the time after an IPO, there's a certain point within 6 months after that IPO date that the stock is trading lower than what it was on that IPO date. What is the best, like, I guess, comparison to Reddit? I mean, you have other social media companies, but Meta has so many different moving parts, you know, owning different companies. Like, Reddit seems like a very pure social media play. Twitter's now off the market, and Twitter was kind of a dog for a long time. So that's what I would say the closest comparison is Reddit is the most equivalent to Twitter, and Twitter never really did that well in the public market. Can Reddit perform better than Twitter did?
I think you're right. It's kind of in its own little in a little group there, and it's hard to compare it to some of the others. I think Reddit's going to do well initially just because of the fact that we haven't had a lot of IPOs, and this is just an exciting opportunity, right? We've all been playing AI stocks. We've been playing weight loss stocks. We've been playing the GMEs, and that's been the excitement. I think this is going to attract a lot of retail flow that's going to come into it afterwards. Why? Because the retail investors, the retail traders, they use Reddit, right? This is a company that the online retail trading community is very familiar with, right? This isn't an Aramco Saudi oil company where it's just people feel like, all right, it's Saudi, I'm going to invest in it. This is a product that I think people are a lot more familiar with than in a normal IPO situation. And I think that's going to really generate a lot of retail investment into this. So I do think we're going to see a pop from this. You mentioned that kind of IPO period 6 months later, we start to see some sell pressure on it. Keep in mind, executives are locked up in their IPO process, and some of the banks and some of the institutions are locked up. There'll be a lock up period for a certain period of time where certain series holders cannot make sales. When that lockup period does expire, that is when we'll start to see a little bit of an influx coming into that on the sell side of the market. So just kind of keep in mind those parameters. It's different for different IPOs, but keep in mind that is something that's out there. But I do think that just with the activity, the excitement, the fact that we're talking about this, we're going to see a pop in the stock for a short period.
Well, there you go. We've been on the line with Jonathan Korpina, Senior Managing Partner at Meridian Equity Partners, as well as a New York Stock Exchange trader. Jonathan, always great to have you on and catch up. Thanks for hopping on Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with us today.
Gentlemen, have a great day and have a great week.
You do the
same.
Thanks, Jonathan. All right, guys. Again, that was Jonathan Korpina from Meridian. Always great to catch up with him. Dennis, we've got about 5 minutes of the show left, and this is rare that we've gone this long in the show without talking about Tesla. So I guess we're due to see what Tesla's doing this morning. Getting a pop. I saw some headline this morning. Wow, trading up 4%.
Big pop now.
Pre-market. I saw news that there was actually going to be a price raise on one of its cars, Model Y, which that's been my biggest deterrent from buying Tesla recently, is that they've been cutting prices. That's obviously going to cut into margins for the company, which has been one of the biggest shining bright spots for Tesla over the past few years, is that their margins are way better than any other car company out there. Is this pop enough to get you excited? Or are you going to chase this at the open?
Never chasing. I have a little bit of Tesla. I sold the majority of my position back at 174. Maybe it was even right around there. I still have a chunk, though. I still have a little chunk. I've been early and wrong on this trade. I think there's still this, Tesla's out of favor. Is this there's some headlines here about price raises. Also, I saw a Shell headline just breaking about a few minutes ago, they're going to divest 1,000 retail sites and shift to EV charging. Probably helps the stock a little bit too. I think there's multiple headlines today helping the stock a little bit. But again, it's just out of favor, and it's hard to really get bullish this stock until it gets back up over that 180. Just talk technicals for a second. We don't have our technical analyst, Joel Alkanen, on today, but I'll give the level. It broke down. It consolidated around that 180, and then we broke down from there. We get back up to that area, it's going to struggle. So if you're buying at 170 today, you're coming into resistance 175 to 180. It's hard to chase here. So talking a little bit against my long-term buck, but it's hard to chase Tesla on a 4% pop when the stock's been so out of favor.
Yeah, and we've been talking about how not just Tesla's out of favor, which looking at the chart, I'll pull up the daily, you can just see over the past, really since the year started, we can go, we're looking right here where my cursor is January, when the market opened this year in 2024. It just has not participated in this broad-based market rally that we've gotten.
No.
But the EV sector,
down significantly.
Right. Like, over
we're talking about a stock that's down 30% for the year on a year that the Qs are up, 12-13% or whatever we are. I mean, this is the weakest of the week. I don't know where it ranks in the S&P, but I got to think this is one of the worst performers, if not the worst performer. I mean, obviously it's 500 stocks, a lot of stocks, so it's probably, but out of the mega caps, I mean, it's been a disaster.
Yeah, it's been by far, and I asked this question on the show like a week or two ago. I was like, where would the market be at if Apple and Tesla were performing well? Because those are two of your biggest positions in the S&P 500. They've both been kind of lagging, Apple a little bit less so, but still just not really participating. But I mean, the point is like the EVs have just been out of favor. You're hearing all these negative headlines from different car companies, not just Tesla's. But like we talked about with solar, that there will be a time to buy solar. Like, I don't think the whole EV story is dead. I mean, it's not like we're talking about something that's 10, 20 years down the road. You see a bunch of Teslas out on the roads and people love them. And it's like, I still think, and the news from Shell, like you said, I'll pull up Shell's chart. We're seeing this transition happening. It just is happening a little bit slower than I think some people were anticipating. And I think that, you're running into some hiccups, which is normal with an industry that's growing and an industry that's set to take over a huge, you know, mainstay that is the automobile industry in the United States. I mean, we've been buying and selling cars here. We're based in Detroit. We've been doing it for over 100 years. Like, it's going to take time. You're going to run into some of these hiccups. I don't think that the last few months price action is reason to say, okay, EVs are all dead. I'm not going to invest in any EVs anymore, because I still think this is coming. It's just taking, again, you're just running into some of these struggles.
You've pushed it further down, this move to EV and hybrids. You know, what I didn't foresee, and I got the EV story absolutely wrong a year ago and got punished for it because I was long lithium stocks. What I didn't foresee was this move from the other majors into hybrid and not full EV. And that's what's really, you know, hurt lithium companies, but it's also obviously just hurt a lot of EV. And then it's just a matter of dollars and cents, and the cars are expensive. Like we talked about with the Ford Lightning, the truck in Canada is $100,000, more than $100,000. I mean, who's buying a $100,000 pickup? So it's tough, and they realized it, and that's why they scaled back production, and they're sitting there on the lots. So they're working and focusing in different parts. And then you got Toyota, which has pushed right into hybrid, and the stock's been a monster, making new all-time highs. So it's been the hybrid movement where you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get a little bit of gas savings, but you can still go gas up, you know, when you're in, you don't have to worry about the battery. So I don't know when the consumer mindset moves full EV. Obviously, some consumers did, but a lot of consumers didn't. And the hybrid kind of gives you a little taste of both. And that's where people are moving. I've had a hybrid before. Hybrid technology was out here 15 years ago. I didn't see it coming back. Like, I had a 2008 Mercury Mariner back in the day, and it was a hybrid, and it was pretty cool. But now it's like, you know, you think everybody's, oh, hybrids are done because moving to EV. But no, it didn't work that way, because the hybrid, they can make it so much cheaper. So the dollars and cents just made sense for the consumer. So that's the issue the Tesla's facing. That's the issue that all the other EV companies are facing. There's always, you know, the people who are wealthier can afford these cars. It's how to make them affordable to the masses. And they're not affordable to the masses yet. And that's why there hasn't been the mass adoption here.
Yeah, and you have a lot of movement there in China, with China's EV companies putting out, you know, some cars that are at good price points, so that could help push the price lower across the world as other companies have to come in and compete with these Chinese models. I mean, we talked about the new Rivian car when they announced it a couple weeks ago and got that big pop. The Rivian, which this isn't expected to come out to 2026, but the Rivian R2 midsize SUV is supposed to start at around 45,000. I mean, that seems pretty reasonable. Like, 45,000 for a brand new SUV is basically going market price. So maybe by the time a couple years from now, we're talking about EVs being more similarly priced. I mean, and that sounds interesting to me. I mean, if I'm looking for a new car in 2 years, and I don't know how much money I'm going to have, but if I'm looking at SUVs, then the Rivian one might be something I'm interested in. But all right, it is not.
It's hard. So again, it's about timing here. And some of these car companies, obviously Fisker looks like it's going down. Maybe they're going to get a bailout here at the end. But I mean, there's just so many. We've talked about this, you know, so many times in the show. It's all about timing with EV. And I agree with you, AB. It's not going away. It's coming. But if we've pushed that further down, can some of these companies actually survive? You know, Tesla's going to be fine. I think Rivian's going to survive too. The matter of, is it an $11 stock or is it a $2 stock? I don't know the answer to that. I've said I kind of think Rivian is going to be the number two EV player here, because you got so many other companies moving to other technology. But just hard to say, yep, we're going to invest here and we're going to be okay because eventually we're going to EV. Well, if it's 5 years until we start getting mass adoption here of these cars, some of these car companies may not survive some of these smaller ones.
Yeah, PK, that's exactly what I need. I need to hit some lotto option plays, and then maybe by 2026, I'll be able to afford that new Rivian. But all right, guys, it is 9:02 a.m. Time to wrap up on pre-market prep. Thank you to Jonathan Corpina from Meridian for joining us today. Dennis, great show. We will be back again tomorrow, 8 a.m. Be here. We have live trading starting up right after this. Don't go anywhere. The stream will redirect you there. Please smash the like. Feel free to follow us on Twitter if you don't already. And we'll see you guys tomorrow morning.